Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Conscious Vibe Podcast,
where we elevate intellect through conscious dialogue
while exploring race, politics, business, and culture.
I'm Dr. Daryl L. Jones.
And I'm Charles D. Mitchell.
Charles Mitchell.
I like the Blazers.
Oh, just a little something I threw on, man. You know, no big deal. How you doing, man?
Good. A little worn down, but I'm good.
All right, man. Yeah, a lot of traveling you doing.
Yeah, I know. Got to slow it down, but it's not going to happen.
Akil McLeod, how are you, man?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing real good.
It's good to have you in the house.
Thanks for having me.
Pleasure to meet you.
Yes. Thank you. I appreciate
this. So, BK, born and raised?
Yes, sir. Born and raised. Flatbush, to be exact.
Wonderful. Yeah, back when Flatbush was Flatbush.
Talk about it.
Yeah.
Now it's different. It's gluten free now, but I mean it's good. It's good.
That's funny. So you left there at what age?
I left New York at 17.
Yeah. Okay.
17. Went off to Buffalo State for college. At first I was gonna stay in New York. At first I was gonna go to, I believe it was York. It's like a community college out there.
Yeah.
But my college advisor at the time, he just had some connections at Buffalo State, and he said, I think you do better here. And I just followed his advice and ended up in Buffalo for about 10 years.
Was he right?
He was right. He was right. I think if I stayed in New York at that time, I probably would have got wrapped up with the wrong stuff and just not stayed as focused, you know what I mean? So he made the good call.
So you took off. You went to Buffalo. Was it tough? Because you know, man, New York is New York. There's nothing like it. Was it a culture shock heading up to Buffalo?
Absolutely. I thought when I was going to go to Buffalo, I thought it was going to be cows and like just farmland. Like, because when you're from New York City, you don't really know anything else outside of New York City. I've done some traveling in the past, but not upstate. I didn't even take a college visit. I just went and that was it. So when we got up there, it was super cold, because of course Brooklyn was cold, but that Buffalo winter was different.
It's wide open winter up
it
there,
it was,
man.
Crazy. And everybody at the time was, I think they just had a really bad storm a few weeks prior, previous winter. So everybody was like, yeah, wait till it gets to winter, man. It's going to be crazy. It's going to be 6 feet of snow. And it was about five. So it was a crazy shock. Crazy shock.
It's but, different.
Made it through.
What would you say was the most valuable parts of being in Buffalo for you? Like, what made that stick and what made it work in terms of, like, obviously you were there for a long time.
Yeah. Meeting my wife was probably the best part of Buffalo, because to be 100%, I was in such a rush to leave. After I finished grad school, I was like, I started my career out there, so things were good. I had some good opportunities, but I just kind of outgrew Buffalo. Once my friends left, once everybody else that I really got connected to, once they started leaving, I seen Buffalo for what it was. And it's not a bad place, but it's a place where you can become comfortable really quickly and just kind of stay there. And I've always been that type to just want more, want to elevate, want to change it up a little bit. And with Buffalo, I seen so many people kind of get stuck. So I was afraid of getting stuck. So I just, you know, packed up. I told her my plan. I said, this is what I want to do. I want to go to California and, you know, try to build something out there. And we only been dating for about a year. And she was like, you know what? Let's do it.
And I was that's beautiful, man.
Yeah, let's go.
And what I applaud you for is having that awareness, too, because to your point, it is really easy to get stuck.
Yeah.
And you know, you mean no disrespect to the place that you're coming from, right?
Right.
But sometimes I think in life you have to figure out what that path looks like and really be focused on what's next. Otherwise, the comforts of all of a sudden you're out of school, you have a job, you have a little more disposable income, life is sort of moving in a good direction.
Yeah.
You know, you get tied down with some responsibilities, and next thing you know, 15 years passes by.
Yep.
You know, and I see that all the time when I go back home. And I love where I'm from. I'm, you know, from Raleigh, North Carolina. I love it. And, you know, I'm excited to get back and see family and friends. But you also realize that it can put you in a perspective around life where there's just nothing more.
Right.
It has its limitations.
Its limitations for sure.
For sure.
So good for you.
Thank you.
So off to Cali. So today, though, you've got a number of things going on, man. You got a podcast, Dapper Advisor. You've got Flip Narrative, wine company. What do you get most excited about?
Right now, the podcast, because that's going to be something new. That's going to be something that is going to be a new challenge. Just I'll be able to meet new people. I mean, what I've been doing in the past in the terms of Dapper Advisor and my resale business and the wine and all those things, my wife, she runs the wine company.
Okay.
That was her dream, her vision. And it took a while for us to kind of figure out the passion, the passion projects, and like what we could kind of build and grow together. Mm-hmm. So once she realized that's what it was, I said, okay, let's go full steam ahead. We wasn't sure how much money it was going to cost and who we would need to talk to, but because that was her vision and she supported all my crazy dreams and ambitions, so I was like, all right, it's cost X amount, let's do it, let's get it done. And she's killing it right now with that.
Man, that's beautiful.
She is killing it.
Fantastic.
She got people willing to work for her for free. She got people wanting to be just a part of the company at no cost, just out of love. And for me, I'm like, that's a testament to like when somebody sees passion and they want to just support it.
So what's the business model? Is she procuring wine? How does that work?
So it's the term is custom crush. Okay. So it's basically from start to finish, you get paired up with the winemaker and they kind of work off of your palate. So you choose everything, the grapes, the bottles, the corks, the labels, everything. It's not like a private label, like throw your own label on there. So she did everything from start to finish. We went back and forth to California about 6 times for different tastings and just, you know, piecing everything together. And from at this point now, she's just handling everything. Mm. It was both of us from the very beginning trying to get everything off the ground. She was actually pregnant at the time of the last few tastings. So I was, while we were doing the tastings, I was like, okay, I got to think like she thinks. Mm-hmm. Would she like this wine? Because at that time, I wasn't too much into wine. I was just drinking sweet wines and stuff like that, where most of us kind of start off at the sweet palates. So I was like, okay, I think she'll like this because this got a rich, smooth taste. I think she'll like that.
So where did you spend most of your time? Napa, Sonoma?
Sonoma County, yeah.
So Pinot Noir?
Mm-hmm. A lot of Pinots. We have a Sauvignon Blanc and we have a Rosé.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The Rosé of Pinot Noir, so same grapes.
Rosé all day.
Rosé all day.
All right.
You know, that's one of my favorites. Yeah.
Wow, man. So when did that business start?
The wine?
Mm-hmm.
That was 2019, because it took a while for the barrels to, for the wine to age and kind of sit in the barrel. So we started the process in 2019 and launched the business about 9 months ago.
Congratulations, man.
Thank you. Fantastic.
You.
My daughter's almost 9 months, so we launched 2 weeks apart from each other. So I'll always remember.
That's great.
What I mean? So,
perfect way to celebrate.
Yeah, for sure.
And then how about Dapper Advisor? What do you do there? Are you, obviously we see you are Dapper.
Thank you.
Take care of yourself, man.
Thank you.
That's nice. So you help others do the same?
Yeah, so Dapper Advisor, that was not another life, but that was like that was my introduction to entrepreneurship.
Okay.
So when I first started working, I was an academic advisor at Buffalo State. And I started that job in 2012. And the Dapper Advisor initially was a blog. I was getting into style, getting into fashion.
Okay.
I learned how to tie a tie on YouTube. And I was like, I guarantee there's other people that don't know how to do these same things. So I just started writing about it, how to shine shoes. Like, I just started blogging everything. And it started to just grow. It went from me blogging to me doing video content to me working with brands and, you know, kind of just being a brand ambassador. And after a while, I was like, this is cool. This is good. But I seen where social media was going. I seen people started to have to share their brunch. They had to start sharing what they ate for dinner. I'm on vacation. They have to show everything. And I was like, okay, this is not for me anymore.
Got it.
So I made a pivot to where I started doing the complete opposite. I got into to just selling product. So I sold all the suits that I had. I started selling the ties that I had because people would ask, oh, where you got that from? Oh, you want this? You like this? Oh, take that. And that's how it really started. So I started selling clothes and selling shoes, accessories. And it's just been transitioning ever since.
Wow.
Yeah.
So where do you, as a dapper male, Where do you do most of your shopping? Like, where do you find the unique pieces? No, I know it's not Nordstrom.
To believe it or not, I've been doing a lot of Nordstrom shopping. Okay,
but they've improved their merchandising a lot, man. All right. This store in particular over here at Fashion Square.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess I haven't been to the.
They've improved a lot, Charles.
I haven't been to the semi-annual sale.
Well, you don't want to wait for that rack.
Yeah.
You'd be looking like everybody else walking around.
And it's hectic in there at that time. Everybody's trying to get that deal in there. But thrift stores. Thrift stores is where it started for me. Okay. That's where you would get that unique tie pin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, those vintage brogues from the 70s or the 80s, and you just got to shine them up, and now they look brand new. Like, that's where it really started, the hunt for those quality pieces, you know?
I have a fraternity brother of mine who actually lived in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
He's from North Carolina, but lived in Brooklyn, recently moved back to the Carolinas. But he essentially started a bespoke business as well in terms of like just – and I remember going to thrift shops with him to find these unique pieces. And, of course, in New York, you can go all over the place to find things. He even took courses to learn how to sew. As adding that skill
That's
to his
huge.
Repertoire. It's really, especially when you're talking about putting together pieces for men, suits, trousers, really, really great skill.
That's what's up.
For sure.
Yeah, I remember growing up, some of the best pieces I had were my great-grandfather's.
Mm.
The caps.
Yep.
You know, the hats, man, the with hat the little feather coming then. Out,
yep,
man.
Yep.
He had an overcoat, man. I actually wanted to stop growing because I didn't want to outgrow the coat, man. That overcoat was just, I got so many compliments on the overcoat. I probably let it out like 5 times.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah.
But no, you're 100% right. And you know, you were talking about the tie.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy story, man. I never had to retie a tie. You know how hard I would work to slip.
Just to slip it over your head. Open it just a little bit.
Because I didn't want to tie it again, man, to your point. I'm like, I didn't want to mess up the knot once I got it.
Yeah, getting a good knot is an art.
Yeah, it's an art.
It's totally an art. And I remember I actually learned how to tie a bow tie on YouTube.
Oh, no. Yeah. Wow.
That's a completely different deal.
Which
I thought they were all clip-ons.
I couldn't tell you which method. I can just tell you I just clicked on a video. How to tie a bow tie easy.
That was so it had to be the like the shoelace, where you just make two bows and then tie it, and then boom.
No, it was one where you do it to overlap.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
So, but I got a funny story about a month ago. You see how I dress all the time. I didn't put a suit on in probably 2 years, probably since pre-pandemic.
Oh, you look great, bro.
But I went somewhere. Thank you. I went somewhere and I was dressing up. I was like, you know, I'm gonna put a bow tie on.
Switch it up
today.
That wasn't the Elvis deal, was it? There was.
Okay, no, joke. Is that a joke? I'm sure that's a joke, right?
I don't know. You talking about this Elvis thing, man.
I'm not talking about the Elvis thing. You're talking about the Elvis thing.
It's still blowing my mind when I look at you. Uh-huh, but it's cool.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
that's, it's all good.
Okay, it's a different conversation, by the way. So anyway, so I'm putting this bow tie on, and in the moment, I forgot how to tie it.
Wow.
Couldn't I remember.
No, man.
And I'm freaking out because I'm like running late. I couldn't figure out how to get this bow tie tied.
So what did you do?
I found another video.
There you go.
Yeah.
And then I had like I figured I was like illiterate or something because I still couldn't figure it out because I'm watching this video, but I'm also rushing. I eventually got in the car and I did something and it wasn't perfect, but I made it work. But that was a little weird.
Good job.
Yeah. Made it work.
So, go ahead, man.
What fraternity?
Kappa Alpha Psi.
Okay, yeah, me too.
You know, I almost said to you,
You a noob as well?
Yeah,
I'm a noob. No way.
Yeah.
I almost said, there's only one. That's really what I almost said. That's really what was going to come out of my mouth was that there's only one. But, you know, we don't want to offend anybody.
What chapter is that?
Five chapter.
I'm Delta Pi, Michigan State.
Okay, yeah, I've had some fun in Michigan.
Single letter chapter?
Yeah, single letter. Come on.
Brother, I didn't see any of that in your background.
Man, to keep it 100% real with you guys, what it is, I really try to build up my own thing. Like, when I was 22, mm-hmm. I joined the frat kind of late. I wanted to get down since I was 18, my sophomore year. And Five Chapter, we don't have a lot of lines. It was before 2018 was 2000. I mean, before 2011 was 2007.
So, really? So just sheer numbers didn't work?
Yeah, just sheer, you know what I mean? So it's one of those situations where when I finally got in, I was like, okay, you know, my dean at the time, he got me my first job. So I seen the power of having that bond and you know, being mm-hmm. in the fraternity. I seen the power in it. So for me, I was just trying to make sure that I made sure I preserved his name and made sure that everything I did, you know, nobody would question, like, oh, you got Akil's job? Oh, man, Akil did terrible. For me, I was like, yo, when I leave Buffalo, people are going to say, yo, Akil did great. Who put him on Kendall? Oh, yeah, man, I love him. Like, I was so concerned about that. So for me, once I left Buffalo, I was like, you know what? I want to just build my own thing to the point where it's like people don't just think I'm just like, I don't even know how to describe it, but I just didn't want people to think, oh yeah, Kappa carried him.
I've heard it called leaning on the shield.
Leaning on the shield. I didn't want to just lean on the shield. But ironically as it is, as I got older, I realized that, especially when you're young, you're that age, that's what you're supposed to do.
That's what it's
you're for. Supposed to lean on the shield. So it was my own like ignorance and me being stubborn in the sense of like, yeah, I want to build my own thing. I want to do my own thing. Now, just got with a Phoenix alumni chapter. Just so I can, have that fellowship, have that network, that community. Because as you get older, you realize your circle gets smaller and smaller. And if you keep moving as much as I did, your circle is like five people.
Well, I think the other thing, too, that you learn is that no one gets anywhere in life without help, right? We all need help of some form or shape. Not that we don't do all the heavy lifting, but there's sometime a door that gets open, you know, a name that gets passed along. Hey, pick up the phone, give that person a call.
Yeah.
You know, something or, you know, a piece of advice that someone gives you along the way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really important part of life to know that, you know, it's really important to include others in the things that you do because you never know who can show you something that you wouldn't have known otherwise or increase your awareness around something that will change your life. So I think that's a big piece.
Well, let's stay in touch, man. I want to talk to you about that Phoenix chapter a little bit.
Okay.
See what's happening. I've committed to try to get more involved.
Yeah.
So it's tough with time. But
it is hard to do. At this point. You know, look, it's almost embarrassing for me being in Phoenix for moved in 1998. So what's that, 24 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
And I've probably gone to maybe two frat meetings. One because my father was here and wanted to go. My father's a nuke as well.
Okay.
And I've not been involved at all. And to your point, it's about, you know, at first it was, you know, I had a reason because, oh, I can't make that at that time on that day, you know, once a month. And then it just moved into something else, right? So it's always something that can prevent you from doing something that's important. It's all about you making that decision.
Yeah.
Do you want to do it and do you want to be a part of something?
So the irony is I crossed literally spring 85, 5/24, 85, some anniversaries today.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Congrats, man.
Literally today, man. That's crazy.
Look at that.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
That's awesome.
Yeah,
that's
man. That's I played as a freshman.
Man, you got so lucky.
Nah.
Well, in hindsight, you was lucky. But at the time, it's not special.
I didn't know what I was doing.
At the time, it's crazy. I didn't know what
I
was doing.
I had no idea,
man. Yeah.
I thought it was... I knew it was going to be tough.
Mm-hmm. And 85, too.
How long?
7 weeks, three
above
days.
Above ground?
Huh?
7 weeks above.
Yeah, but you know how that works.
That's what I said, above ground.
Yeah.
You know how that works, man.
Yeah, I know exactly how that works.
They weeded three cats out before we even.
But I'm saying, how was it in the 80s?
We had to
though?
Bring one cat
just
back.
Just exactly what you think.
Just because the stories I heard, it's crazy.
So, to put it in perspective, you know, let's put it on blast. I don't know if you recall, there was a Jet article about my line. You remember the publication Jet Johnson Publishing?
Yeah.
If you go back, so we actually lost our chapter based
beauty
on some
week?
Things that happened. My mom was beauty of the week.
That's crazy.
She worked at Johnson Publishing Company.
I remember.
Yeah. She was actually in there in a bathing suit. I'm like, Mom, can't be doing that.
But they kept,
I gotta hear about
they
this
kept
in
it
school.
In-house. They was like, who's beauty of the week?
Yeah. Yeah, she was actually in there, man. But So for real, man, that we lost the chapter for a year based on some shenanigans that happened with my line. But yeah, it's everything you thought it was, because you know the deal. Chapters from everywhere, that was the badge of honor.
Yeah.
You get set out. You get set out and everybody.
They converge.
We won't go into all the details, but it's everything you thought it was.
Yeah, I could only imagine.
And I would be honest with you, man, if I knew more, I'll be really honest with you, I probably wouldn't have done it.
Really?
I'm an only child, man. But for me, once I got involved, it was like, I'm no turning back.
Right.
And I have no regrets at all. But
same for me. My father was a Kappa, so that was a big.
And that's pressure too, man.
A big motivator for me. What else are you going to do, right? Obviously, someone that I obviously admire and respect and love very much and wanted to certainly make him proud. Mm. And so that, to your point, the pressure, right? So there was no doubt that that's the path.
How about your mom, Charles?
She's a Delta.
Delta.
She and my sister. To your point, I don't know, would it have been on my radar particularly as strong as it was, right?
Right.
But to your point, no regrets for sure.
Yeah.
So 80s and HBCU.
Hmm.
So yeah, he got a different experience.
You got the whole experience.
A little different.
Yeah. But it makes you who you are, man. You know, it is what it is.
I always say there's a grounding there that can never be taken away, right? In terms of the experience and
that foundation.
I say this all the time. There's nothing like living with black folks day in and day out for 4 years of your life.
Yeah.
There's nothing like it.
It's rich, man. I think it's rich.
It's really rich. Is something magical about it in terms of just seeing each other every day, trying to excel and be better, learn, grow. It's amazing.
That's beautiful.
So, Akil, man, you obviously, man, have achieved some wonderful things from an entrepreneurial perspective, education. You got a wonderful family, it sounds like. What's next on the horizon for you?
Man, there's so much things next. So the podcast will be next, and that's gonna be something for me. It's almost gonna be therapeutic, because that's the way I want to approach it. Because the vision for that is to literally just be that resource for new dads, expecting dads, aspiring dads, and even the OGs that's been in the game for a minute. Because I want to pull in as many, just as many perspectives as possible, because I think there's a lot of resources and there's a lot of conversation around motherhood and what to expect and so many books. And my wife was so prepared, and she's a reader. She looks at interviews, so she was well prepared. For me, I wasn't, as much as I thought I planned out things, there's so many things that I just was floored with. And it's probably the past 4 months where I'm much more comfortable. I got a nice little rhythm going. I know what I'm doing.
What was your biggest surprise, or what is your biggest surprise about fatherhood?
Biggest surprise, I thought it was gonna be smoother, but it's not
as
smooth.
When you say smoother, what do you mean?
So the biggest surprise for me, when a man has a child and you're in the home with the child in the very beginning, you have that bond with the wife as well, with the mother of your child as well, your testosterone drops 30-50%. And when that happens, it happens because your body's being prepared to nurture, to provide that extra love and affection that a newborn needs. I didn't know that. I recently learned a lot of these things. But in the moment when it happened, the first thing I told my wife, I just feel so emotional. I feel so empathetic. What's going on? I'm such a different person. I don't like it. I literally told her that. And I didn't understand that was
the reason.
And when I say I'm so empathetic, so emotional, I used to move in such a stoic way where things would happen in the world or around other people, and I would be, oh man, that's crazy. That's all I really had for people. Oh man, that's crazy. I'm sorry for you. But now you hear a tragic story. If it involves kids, you're it hits you different.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So now it's just about trying to just be that platform and be that voice for other people that wouldn't, just so they don't have to deal with what I had to deal with. Because it was rough. It was kind of dark. It was kind of just so much changes that happen.
So how old is your child now?
9 months.
9 months?
That's yeah. Right. Okay. Yeah. All right. So now right. It's such a better experience. Like every soon as she sees me, she's jumping, she's happy, she's smiling, and she's just full of love. Full of love. Because it's as tough as it was for me in the beginning, all I did was just try to bond with her. From the day she got out the womb, I'm, you know, skin to skin. I'm trying whatever I could do. But I understood at that time, the one thing I knew at that time was that only thing that she could understand is time and attention. She don't mm-hmm. understand the words yet, so you gotta care to her. You gotta cater to her. Showing love to a child is, you know when I'm hungry. You know when I'm sleepy. And you do that. You take care of me. I don't have to tell you change my diaper right now. You just do it. Mm-hmm. And once you get to that level with them where they feel, you know, they feel that nurture, the whole game changes. Then it becomes easy.
But that's beginning beautiful. Of that is. That's man. Beautiful. That's
and
beautiful.
Insightful. How yeah. insightful is that?
Yeah. Enjoy that too, though. because, you know, when I come home now, it's only the dogs that jump up and excited
yeah,
to see me.
Yeah.
But it's a beautiful thing, though. It is. And what I love more than anything is sitting across the table from a black man talking about, you know, this part of nurture and love when it comes to the children, right? And I think that's a part of life that gets missed.
Oh, yeah.
Because I don't think that we get viewed that way, that we have those emotions that mm-hmm. Carry that deep, deep caring and love for our offspring. I think that's something that needs to be heard more often. Mm-hmm. And certainly, mm-hmm. I don't want to say celebrated because you're just doing what every man in the world does what you should do.
Right, right.
So let's not celebrate it. But, you know, certainly, you know, let's not discount it.
Exactly. Exactly. I think you hit the nail on the head because it's one of those things where it's what everybody else does and it's what everybody else should do. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I think for a long time, black men in particular, we've seen it as an option. Oh, I'm not with my baby mom, so I don't got to be there for that. I don't got to do that. I got to work, so she going to hold that down and she going to do it. And that's, to a certain degree, yes, you have to work. You have to do these things, but you also have another responsibility mm-hmm. as well.
Oh, for sure.
And you got to find that time. You got to balance it out however you can. You know what I mean? And thankfully, I've been working from home for the past almost 6 years now. So I had the luxury of being at home and like being a part of that whole, you know, system. But at the same time, you know, I understood, okay, she's only going to be a baby buffer so long. It's going to come a point where she's going to be in school. She's going to be doing her own extracurricular activities. She's going to be doing her thing. So let me take advantage of this time now. Let me bond with her now while she's still small and all these things. And as she gets older, the bonding just looks different. You know, I go to the gym, you come to the gym. I'm running to the mm-hmm. store. Come on, let's go. So she'll be able to see, you know, what a typical day-to-day looks like, how to interact with people, what it looks like, what it looks and feels like to be loved by a man, period. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of women out here, they don't even know what that's like.
We were talking about that, mm-hmm. Charles.
That's and a big thing. Same thing. I think huge. That's a really big thing to have.
Charles has two daughters.
Okay. For your daughters in particular to know what it's like to be loved by a man and mm-hmm. how a man should love you, right? Mm-hmm. And that it comes with a lot of care and respect. And it doesn't, when someone mistreats you, that's not love.
Right.
Right. And so I think having that as a backdrop mm-hmm. for what she knows love looks like, mm-hmm. I mean, I think that is everything when it comes to how they will develop and form relationships in life.
Yeah.
Super important.
Yeah.
So what did you study in school, man? I mean, part of the reason I ask is you seem to have a way of packaging life lessons for the future. And I don't know if you attribute that to how you were raised, maybe part of it is BK, some of it is, you know, hardcore formal education. What did you study in school?
So I got my bachelor's in criminal justice and then my master's is in higher education and student affairs.
Okay.
So yeah. At first I was wanted to be something in law enforcement. Mm-hmm. I remember at the time when I was studying criminal justice, I met this black guy, and he was cool. He had the swag, and he was a U.S. Marshal. He was like, he came to the school and not necessarily recruiting, but he came to the school and just trying to just give us other options, mm-hmm. perspectives. And I didn't grow up with a dad, so seeing this black guy came in cool. I think he had a suit on at the time, came in all cool and swaggy. I said, okay, I could do that. And then just doing some more research on it, I said, this is a little too punitive for me. This is a little too rigid.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I was already mm-hmm. really rigid and mm-hmm. rough. So I was like, I got to do something different. So then I had other conversations with more people, and they said, you connect with people really well. You should do student affairs. You should be a counselor. And I said, a counselor? That sounds a little, I don't know if I want to do a counselor and sit and talk to people. I'm thinking, you know, long, drawn-out conversations. But it was more so just about the advising aspect and the mentorship, what they were really talking about. So I just used that, and I just went to school for that, and it was cool.
You mentioned something. I was literally just thinking when you started talking about that. I was like, I wonder how you were raised. And you mentioned the fact that you weren't raised by, you didn't have a father in your life. Tell us about your upbringing. Who raised you, siblings? What was it like growing up?
Only child, single mother household. I'm not going to say we grew up poor, but I didn't have the extras. And I always wanted the extras. Mm-hmm. I wanted the kicks. I wanted the jackets. I wanted the everything extra, the video games. We didn't have that. But we never went without the necessities. So I always got to credit her for that. But it was, you know, New York at that time in the 90s, I didn't even know it was that bad until I got away. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, oh, everybody don't got to deal with this? Everybody don't always got to duck on the train and worry about gangs and all these types of stuff. Like, y'all don't have to deal with this? And then I was like, oh, wow. God covered me through and through, because to get out of that, I seen the people that didn't get out, and I mm-hmm. see what their lives look like. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, I got lucky.
Yeah. It's funny.
Well,
I was looking
at it. You were doing something right. I mean, I think there's probably a luck aspect to it, whatever luck is, but your mom and you were focused mm-hmm. on doing right, and it worked out. Yeah. Wow, man. So as far as the podcast, have you had episodes yet?
No, so I'm literally still in that formation stage of everything. So what I was doing prior, I was running a YouTube channel, and I was telling people about how to start like an eBay business, how mm-hmm. to run a resale business. So my business started from, like I told you before, selling my clothes, mm-hmm. selling my suits, selling my shoes. And once I realized, okay, how I can do that, I just tried to scale it. So I was doing that for about 5 years, and then I started the YouTube channel to kind of show people how to do it. So now I'm kind of breaking away from that, because I realized it was consuming too much of my identity. I was like, oh, the reseller guy, the YouTube guy for selling stuff in thrift stores. Not to say there's anything wrong with that, but I just didn't want to box myself in with that. Mm-hmm. I'd rather people say, oh, Akil McLeod, the guy that, you know, talks about fatherhood and business and things like that. That's what I wanted to be more known for. And that's where my life is right now. Because it's more than just reselling on eBay. It's the wine. It's, you know, content creation. It's fatherhood. Like, those are the things that's really important to me now. So I'm still trying to map out everything. I don't know when you're going to have this video posted, but hopefully by then I'll have some episodes, you know,
before you
completed.
Know it.
Right. You know what I mean? So that's the goal. That's the goal.
That's good.
Well, if there's anything we can do to help, man, let us know. Not that we're experts, but we've done a lot of trial and error, and, you know, we're happy with where we are. We've got obviously a great production team that we work with. So if there's anything we can do, or any questions, man,
absolutely
appreciate it.
You know, do feel free to reach out.
I will. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
So I'm still kind of bugging on the Noop thing, though, because that was nowhere in your profile, man. And for that to come out,
you know, it's funny. I literally just happened to glance to my right for a second, and I noticed the tags.
I didn't see it until afterwards.
Yeah,
don't take me that far.
Yeah, and it's funny because, you know, he and I have spent a lot of time together in the last few years, and I don't think either one of us has ever seen the other wear a paraphernalia.
I don't wear it neither.
Ever.
Not one time.
Not one time.
I don't have bands. I don't have
one time.
Pins or anything. I gave all my stuff away.
Oh, like, did you?
As I traveled and I met bros from different stuff, if I had a pin on, yo, bro, it's nice to meet you, bro. Take that with you.
I can't tell you where my stuff is. It's probably at my mom and dad's house in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that's where it is.
Yeah.
But.
Well, it's in your heart, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly what I was about to say.
That's where I keep it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, and on my arm, too.
Oh, you got a brand? Tat?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did, brand?
Yeah, I got a brand.
Yeah,
that's the brand.
So before we depart, man, is there anything you would either like to ask us or make sure that we hit as it relates to you?
Man, so are you a dad too? So, or you know, you said you have two daughters?
I have three kids.
Okay. No, not as far as I know.
I have two daughters and a son.
Not as far as I
know. No, I'm kidding. Man, that was some ignorant shit to say.
Fingers crossed.
Any phone calls you need to make, reach back into the past. Hey, I'm just curious.
I mean, for you, since you do have two daughters, what's some advice you could give me? What's some game that you could share?
Man, advice. Well, I'm never one to feel like I'm even qualified to give advice on just about anything. But the one thing I would say is that just always let them know how much you love them, you know? And I think what you'll find out is what I've learned over time is that at some point they become, you know, you can do all the things to try to shape and mold and to try to expose them to things, which I think is really important because you want to create teachable moments in life out of situations, good and bad, you know. Right. There are going to be times where they do things that you don't particularly care for or like, but there are opportunities to teach and for you to learn too, right? Because sometimes it doesn't mean that what we think is the right thing is the right thing.
Right.
So I think it's a two-way path where you learn a lot from your kids as well. But more than anything, I would say is that when they reach this point in life where they're making the decisions for themselves and you're, even if you're financially still controlling things, relatively speaking, they need you for resources. They're also at an age where they can make decisions for themselves and you have to trust that you have taught them enough and that they've seen you enough. I think that's a big piece too is, you know, kids watch and see, they watch what we do as parents. And it's not good enough to say, hey, you need to do this. Particularly if that's not a reflection of how you carry yourself in life as well.
Right.
So I try to be focused on that and try to make sure that my kids, particularly my girls, because I think it's really important for them as they go through life and start to think about having relationships, that they have them with people that are moving in the same path in life, that are gonna treat them well. I don't wanna go to jail for somebody mistreating my child.
Right.
But no, more importantly, seriously, I just think that when you show them how a man should love a woman, you know, through how your relationship is with them, and particularly how you treat their mother,
right.
I think that goes a long way to teaching them what they can expect from a partner in life and that they should accept no less.
That's powerful. Thank you.
You know what, man, and now just from an observational perspective.
I got questions too, though.
Oh, okay. I'll say the one thing. I'm glad that Charles touched on it. Again, I've known Charles going on 3 years now. I remember that moment I was having dinner at your house. You know, I pay attention to everything, whether I talk about it or not. And your daughter reached out to you. And you and Sherry were having a conversation about, well, why didn't she call Sherry? You said, why is she calling me? And she wanted some advice on the hoop game. Mm-hmm. It seemed like something small. Yeah. It was March Madness and she had a pool. But it's that trust.
Yeah.
Like you trust that you're doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
You trust that you can't force everything, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, and I think about how my mom raised me, only child as well.
Right.
My mom had me at 17. Mm. My mom did a fantastic job. But at some point, trust had to kick in.
Yeah.
Is this it? I got to send him off to school.
Mm-hmm.
We're kind of in the hood, as it relates to.
Yeah.
I can't walk this kid to school.
Yeah.
So it's that trust, man, that what you're doing and what your wife is doing is working.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing I would say. And her calling you, it actually touched me to see she's thinking about her dad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's a basketball game, but at the end of the day, you know it's much bigger than that.
Right.
Right. So I thought that was beautiful, man. And I could tell how it touched him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I could tell how it touched him.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, my kid's away from, she's still in high school, but she's away at a boarding school in New Hampshire. And, you know, when that phone rings and I see her name pop up on my phone, yeah. Like, it's like I'll stop. Everything stops. Yeah. The world stops. Yeah. Nothing more important.
So that's beautiful. You said you had a question. Hopefully not too tough, man.
No. I'm not. I'm at the tough ones because I'm gonna ask you about your dad stuff. Want, and I'm gonna ask you about
like dapper stuff because he's super dapper.
Yeah, I like that jacket, bro. I like that jacket. I was checking it out. I'm definitely.
Thank you.
The thing for sure is that because I remember as soon as I walked in, you said you used to work for Nike.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure you're doing the podcasting now. I'm sure life transition.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of those business transitions in life, because I'm mm-hmm. going through it right now. What were some of the things that you used, like the tools or the people you spoke to kind of make that transition smooth or just give you some direction?
Yeah, it's a really good question. You know, even though I worked for a $35 billion company, I typically had pretty big teams of 300, whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm.
And I always treated it like my own business. Mm. Charles is a true entrepreneur. He and his wife have a major company. They do wonderful things. I treated that like my business. Mm. So it was never feeling as if I was entitled as an employee. I never looked at myself as an employee. Every day I got up and went to bed as if that was my business. Those are my folks.
Right.
The other thing I always kept in mind is why I was doing it. And I'm gonna be really real with you on this one. For me, it was financial liberation. Every day, that's why I knew in my 40s I wanted to be done. And I was able to accomplish that through investments and things right. like that. But congrats. Those were the two things that were critical for me. I'm a loner, man. I don't love a lot of people, to be honest with you. I don't love being around a gang of people.
Mm.
And I wasn't, quote unquote, flourishing in a major corporate environment where I'm on the road 70% of the time. I wake up in China, I don't know, can't remember where I am because I'm in a hotel. That wasn't my move.
Yeah.
So the financial liberation was always first and foremost for me. And then something else you said, man, treat everybody the same. Treat everybody with kindness. And I got to Nike because the person that they called at Pepsi didn't want the job. That person recommended me, and to this day, I don't know who it was.
Wow.
But it changed my life. That was in 96. They would never tell me who it was. They said, man, we really didn't want you, to be honest with you. We're happy we got you, but you weren't that dude.
That's crazy.
Yeah, still don't know who it was, man.
Power of relationships.
I think for him, for sure, power of relationships. Well, and not just relationships, because what he's saying is he didn't even know who the person is, but the impression that he made on whoever that was, right?
Yeah.
That they thought of him.
Yeah.
And that his name meant something,
mm-hmm.
And that they could pass that forward. But I think, you know, when I think of DJ, like, I feel like you had a plan.
I did.
He had a plan. He went into that scenario and situation, observed the opportunity and what it could be, and had a plan and executed that plan.
Yeah, that's powerful.
And Akil, you know, things happen, man, and nothing works to perfection. But, you know, it's also avoiding divorces, alimony,
child support. Mm-hmm.
Where I saw my boys who were also getting it as executives,
mm-hmm.
but when it came time to, they should kind of be shutting it down, they were revamping because they went through a major life change that had financial implications, mm-hmm. right? So it's managing that part of it mm-hmm. too. And you can't manage that to perfection either, but it's having that plan and that strategy and being really clear about what it takes to get you to your pinnacle, whatever that mm-hmm. is. And I knew, man, in my 40s, I had to be done as far as not being able to manage my time.
Yeah.
So.
That's about
his time. That's the thing we can't get back, mm-hmm. any of us.
Can't get it back.
Yeah, can't get it back. And when you own it, when you own your time, that's a beautiful thing mm-hmm. too.
That's success.
It's a beautiful thing.
To me, that's the pinnacle of
it is, especially with a family, you know. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, we've all been kids, right? It's like you remember things about your parents that they don't think you remember.
Mm-hmm.
You remember scenarios sitting in the back of a car on a road trip, whatever. They mm-hmm. don't think you remember that. And your daughter remembers so many things that to you was just like fleeting moment.
Right.
For her, it's this new experience, man. Yeah. So can't ever get that back.
Yeah. That was dope.
Yeah.
See, I told you I had a good one for you.
You did, man. Luckily, I had a little coffee in my system.
See, I don't take these opportunities for granted. Because anytime I get a chance to be around, you know, some OGs that I respect, I admire, I pull from them. And that's what kind of steers me in the right direction. Because I, like I said before, I didn't have a father figure or anything like that. So mm-hmm. when I'm around people that's willing to share, I'm going to soak the game up.
Yeah.
Because that's one thing I've seen with the people that are successful. They listen.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they pay attention. And for me, I'm like, okay, if that's what it takes, I'm going to do that.
Do it.
You're way ahead of the game, my man.
Thank you.
And the other thing it sounds like you did, man, was you chose you wisely chose a partner.
Super
That's
important.
So huge, right?
Super mm-hmm. important.
Like you were really wise and intent and deliberate around who you chose.
Super intention.
And that's
super important.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you, guys.
So look, man, hopefully we stay connected for a lot of different reasons.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And I do want to talk to you more about the Phoenix chapter and see what's going on there. I feel like probably at a point in time where I can get back involved in some things. So,
man. In a couple of years.
What'd you say?
Need a pole mark in a couple of years.
Oh, I don't know.
About to jump in. Jump in on the deep end.
Yeah,
it's gonna jump right in.
Man. I might start with a few meetings, but it's been such a pleasure, man.
Thank you. It was a pleasure meeting you. We appreciate you joining us on the show.
Thanks for having me, man. This was great.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Thank you.
And thank you for joining us on the Conscious Vibe.
Thank you for joining us.
And check us out on tcvpodcast.com.